Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Inside the NDL. I am your host, D. Kane, with my co-host, Penguin, and our guest tonight is Shell. Penguin, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. Had a nice salad for dinner, some lovely sparkling water. I'm feeling pretty chipper.
That is awesome. And Shell, you have graced us with your presence. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me on. This podcast got me out of watching a terrible show that I don't like with my wife, so I appreciate your time.
We are here to help, that indeed. All right, so let's go ahead and just jump into the questions here so that not only us, but our fellow members of the NDL can really get to know you, Shell. So you've been around since season three and only missed a couple seasons since you joined. What brought you to the NDL and what's been the reason that you've stayed?
Yeah, so the well, I guess the long version, but I'll give it pretty quickly. Somewhere I don't even know, 2002-ish, 2003-ish. I started working at a new job. I met up with Corey there. I know, well, at least most of you know Corey, or he goes by C Nasty. We worked together at the same job, and we both realized we love football. And I had always, played NCAA, and we started doing the not a franchise, but we started doing what's the word? We'll just call it franchise. We started doing a franchise together, and we were doing the pass the memory card thing, right? So we worked together on night shift. So I'd play my game for the week, go to work at night, give him the memory card. He would play his game. And, so we would do it. We would do that and play our seasons. And then, I think it was Corey that found, League Daddy and, the online league. So we started in a league called the NNBL. I know a few NDLers were in there. And I think it was through Noel for real. I think Noli's the one that got us hooked up in the NDL. And that's pretty much how we got in. And then, of course, the rest is history. And just to not correct the record, but to note, those two seasons I missed, it was not my fault. I had bought my I bought a, my first house, in fact, bought my first house, and I still don't know what happened, but as soon as I started playing games online, NCAA, in the new house, I couldn't, like, 50% every other game I would play would disconnect, and I had no idea why, to the point where I just basically had to quit the league until, like, I figured out what was going on. I honestly don't even remember how I fixed it, but I had to, like, quit halfway through a season and then miss the next season, and then I did something to fix it, got it fixed, and I was back and up and running. But yeah, those were dark times. But yeah, otherwise, that's how I got connected and in the NDL.
I love those classic origin stories that go back to the days of using the memory cards.
Memory card back and forth.
I wonder how long the average new user would last if
Oh,
they had to use a memory card to best.
they're
Do that
younger, they
struggle?
would. Yeah,
Yeah,
because if they're younger, that's all they know is now. There's no way they can do it. It's not a knock on them. It's just they never had to do it, so they wouldn't want to do it.
or taking the memory card and sending it off for training with people, and you to input the names for the
Names,
rosters as well back in the
yeah.
day. Oh
They just
man.
send it in the mail to some random person to put some names in there for you.
Yeah. This day and age, I feel like if we engage had to do that type of activity, we would somehow instantly be on some sort of NSA watch list for this activity.
Most likely, it wouldn't be good.
Yes. Well, as jumping into there, talking about your origins and stuff there, what you mentioned that you were working with Corey back in the day. What kind of work was that?
That was way back in the day. So we worked night shift. It was right after I graduated college, I went to grad school. So just basically trying to find a job, if you will, in the meantime. So we were doing like patient registration in a hospital in an ER. So we were those people that everyone hate that would go in and ask for you for your copay and your money while you had a broken leg and get your insurance and all that good stuff. So that was pretty much the start of my working career, if you will. Started there. But yeah, that was 20 plus years ago, about 22, 23 years ago now.
So basically, dealing with all the people who want to see a doctor, they got to talk to you first instead.
Yeah, you want to see a doctor, but then I'm going to be the one that comes and asks you for money. So they didn't like us.
Do you have any particularly entertaining or memorable incidents from that era?
Man, it was in Orlando. It's a level. It's called a level one trauma center. So level one is basically like the worst of the worst, if you will. And we're the only level one trauma center in Central Florida. And I work, in the emergency room. So, I mean, I guess I don't want to get, we're a family podcast, so I don't want to give you guys like gory details. But I would just say. No, even though I'm not like I wasn't a clinical person, of course, not like healing people, but I've seen pretty much everything you can possibly imagine. If you can imagine it, I've basically seen it. And I'm not like grossed out by that stuff. And I guess it kind of worked out. Like I don't want to be the one like working on a person with some gross stuff going on, but I don't mind watching, you know. So it kind of was in a good spot to be, but you know, got to see it all. Lots of crazy people too. Not just the gory stuff. Lots of crazy people.
So stuff like limbs being removed and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, like are coming into the ER with a limb already gone. Yep, yep.
Fantastic.
I'll give you a funny one though. I'll give you a funny one just real quick. It just kind of hit me. When drunk people would come in, basically we just let them sleep them off, and they wouldn't even really get their own room. We just put them like in a bed or stretcher, like, and just line them up on the hall or something like that, right? So we had a drunk guy and a drunk girl. I don't think they came in together, but both passed out, you know, whatever, right? So actually, no, it might have been two drunk guys. I don't know. The second person doesn't really matter, but someone walks by and just happens to notice one of the drunk dudes is just peeing on the other drunk person.
Wow.
So stuff like that. I got a million of those stories, and just like he didn't know what he was doing. Not that that excuses it, right? But just a million of those stories of just like I said, either crazy people or just some of the like craziest things you've seen in terms of like accidents and whatnot.
So not quite NDL convention level.
No, not quite. We didn't get to that level. We tried, but we didn't quite get there.
Fair enough.
All right. So believe it or not, I actually remember when you and Corey worked there. Like you guys would be on the boards whenever you guys were on shift, and we like that's when the conversations would get all kind of interesting and funny and hyped. So yeah, I actually remember those days. Jesus.
Yeah, because well, not just that, because you probably also remember because we work night shift. So yeah. And granted, sometimes we wouldn't be busy. So, but our shift would start at 11. So at 11, we're still on there probably with some of you guys. But then by like 3 or 4 a.m., Corey and I are still just responding to random posts from earlier in the day, and like no one else is awake, of course. So him and I are probably the only two on there just responding to posts here and there. It was good times back then.
Yeah, it was definitely. Now let me ask, because you've only had one losing season from what I can see since you've entered the league, what do you accredit your success on the sticks to?
Yeah, so and I'll put an asterisk by that losing season. That was the first season when I moved in my new house and couldn't get a connection going. So those are sim losses. Those are not played losses. But it is a losing season nonetheless. But yeah, I think I might only play 2 or 3 games that season, and then just kind of was like, yep, if I'm going to disconnect every other game, that's not fair to the other folks. So I got to kind of just bow out until I can fix it. So those are mostly sim losses. I don't know, I just kind of always had a knack for video games, and probably or maybe a reason is I've basically, maybe not in the literal sense, but basically I've never played anything other than sports games. But I'm like, you know, since I was 5 years old and got my first Nintendo and played 10 Yard Fight, I've just been, you know, like probably most of us here, just been, you know, a crazy addicted video game kid. But for me, again, only sports games. So I think that kind of just maybe just allowed me more time to play sports games, because I just kind of have a knack for being pretty decent at those sports games. But I guess it's because I'm not playing the Zeldas and the Last of Us games of the world. So I'm just play, if I'm playing, you know, like, I mean, nowadays it's just NCAA and golf, but it's always something NCAA golf, Madden, what am I missing? What's the one I'm missing? I can't think of it. But the show, just any sports game over the years, that's pretty much all I've played. So I think that maybe is why, you know, just by only playing those, I've played them more, which kind of, you know, just maybe gives me a little advantage with having practice more, if you will.
No, I got you. Because I will say this, granted, Corey's still kind of, you know, lagging behind. He's getting back up there, but
he's getting there, though.
He is. But I remember, as far as consistently doing so, you and Corey were two of the most consistently good passers in the league that I can remember, like every freaking season. And even now, you know, you don't really shy away from, you know, too many decent season numbers as far as your quarterback goes. I even asked you for tips when it came to the passing game myself. So hats off to you when it comes to that. Penguin?
Well, jumping into that there, you're talking about your success, take a little sidetrack there. There's been much made of this season and downplaying your unbeaten record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, given all the success you've had, do you take this as a, how much of a slight do you take this as? You know, how is the disrespect real?
I don't take it as a slight, but I mean, I look at it in a couple of ways. You know, the schedule strength, it speaks for itself, but it doesn't speak in a good way for me, right? But, you know, I was also 12-0 last season. And I think in the since we returned, what does that mean? If I do the number, I'm 44-4 in regular season since I returned. So I'd like to think I'd be 12-0 if I had a better schedule, but you never know. Like, but again, the schedule does speak for itself. It's not a very good schedule. But you can only play the games on your schedule, and I did that, and I'm 12-0, and we'll see where we can go from there. Big 12, Big 10 championship game tomorrow night, in fact.
Awesome. So follow up to piggyback on that there. Given that, regardless of how the rest of the season plays out, whether you 35 everyone in the playoffs or get summarily, you know, savaged by an SEC opponent potentially, will this affect how you schedule in the future? Will you look to silence the haters, or are you just going to throw up fingers and do whatever the heck you want and go 12-0 again?
So probably the latter. So, I'll say a couple things. So I've always just scheduled my buddies, you know, and let the chips fall where they may, right? So what was it? My first season with Oregon, I went 10-2. Didn't make the CFP. Schedule wasn't nearly as bad as you know, schedule strength, Massey wasn't nearly as bad as this season, but I can live with that. I went 10-2. I didn't really deserve the CFP, just, you know, based on that schedule strength. I think maybe it was in the 50s or something like that. But I play the guys I want to play, so I, like I said, let the chips fall where they may, and I can live with that. This season, sort of same thing. So I only have, what, I have 9 conference games. Oregon State is a rival, so I only have room for 2 out of conference anyway. And I've played, I don't know if it's all 4 seasons, but probably at least 3 seasons. I play, you know, Mark Barakoff, and then U.S. Marine. Those are just my guys. I go, Barakoff and I go way back. So just, you know, playing him is awesome. And then U.S. Marine and I go way back as well, but he's actually an Oregon fan. So he always tells me, like, playing against Oregon is his favorite game of the year. So he likes to play me. So I scheduled those 2 games, the same 2 games I scheduled last season. You know, there was definitely some thought to, you know, do I want to, like, you know, tell one of them, can't play, got to try and get, you know, a tougher schedule there. But for a couple of reasons, one, same thing. Like I said, I just like playing my buddies. They want to play. I'm more than happy to play them. But also I was looking ahead to next season. You know, I was looking ahead to thinking, you know, what can I do to maximize my points, you know, get the most possible points. And if I think it's the third time I say it, but if the chips fall in a certain way, maybe, you know, when we draft next season, I can get my favorite team. So, and that's LSU. So there was some, that was at least a part of the scheduling as well, thinking ahead to next season and not even so much this season.
So basically, you know, the illustrious Coach Barakoff and U.S. Marine need to step up their game to help you out. That's my takeaway from there.
It would be helpful. It wouldn't hurt, but they can keep doing whatever they're doing, but it definitely wouldn't hurt. But no, I'm already happy to play them next season and the following season after that. If we want to keep those rivalries going, I'm not against that at all.
Well, I certainly hope they do that.
Yeah.
All right, Shell, got a question for you, because we all know that you are one of the people that wear the hats, and one of the hats is a very important hat. With that being said, let's say you just won an NDO game by 36 points. How would you handle punishing yourself?
Oh, man. So I would. So first, I'd have to take my hat off, I think. You know, just the easy answer is, you know, I'd probably have to recuse myself and sit that one out and let, what is it, Rain and Nidler and maybe Big Mike handle that one. But I would like to think I would be treated just as fairly as everyone else has been. And, you know, obviously the 36 or 35 point rule has been certainly a point of contention. The rule, how the rule is written, how in a new world it seems, or, you know, since we've been back, how we're interpreting the rule. So I would just say I would like to be treated exactly how everyone else has been treated, which means, you know, if I went over 35 on purpose, I should be gone. And if I went over 35 not on purpose, consider the circumstances, and maybe I wouldn't be gone and have some, but definitely have some kind of repercussions, kind of how we've done it the last 4 seasons. But probably just the main thing would be I should be treated just like anyone else would be. And that goes for any rule, obviously, not just the 35-point rule. If I broke any other rule, Same thing should, same consistency should apply across the board.
That is definitely so.
Let's hope I don't do that.
Well,
all right.
Yeah.
I'm knock my schedule. If I win a game 63-0, I might get more respect.
I don't know about that one.
I can't shut anyone. I'm not shutting anyone out. I'm just joking there.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all know that that's been a very big talking point along with the whole AA versus Heisman. I mean, me personally, when it comes to the 36-point rule, I understand why it's there. You know, when we are sitting down to play these games with each other, we kind of want to enjoy, and nobody enjoys, you know, just getting thwomped over and over again with, you know, it seeming like there's nothing you can do. So to find a suitable common ground, I think that's where everybody's trying to come to. And I know those that the powers that be, you know, with every, just like with everything else, you guys will make the best decision that's going to fit the league as a whole and go from there.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, the game itself changing probably has a big part to play in a lot of the, I don't want to say not confusion, but just differing opinions. Right. So the game is now just so much more wide open. So a 28-point, a 31-point comeback is just, I mean, I'm fairly certain it's just much more likely to happen nowadays than it was 10 to 15 years ago. So that's, I think that's why we're seeing, you know, maybe more people push the limits and get to a point where they're up 30, 31, 35, instead of, you know, slamming on the brakes at 28, right? Because we've seen 28-point comeback. We've seen a 35-point comeback in NDL. So I think that definitely plays a part in it and some of the, you know, the why we're seeing it happen a little more and why we have a lot of differing opinions on it as well.
Yeah, I know for me, I get a lot into reading the reviews, reading the reports and reading patch notes and things like that when it comes to the game. And one of the things that I know is a big concern for me is when I was talking to guys, anytime you are respectfully punting the ball because you're not trying to, you know, basically abuse your opponent, the game isn't reading that respectfully. It's reading that as your opponent has successfully stopped you and they're going to award your opponent momentum that they did not earn. And that's when we start to see these games kind of turn into something that they shouldn't turn into. So that's why I can understand some people having, you know, bringing up the conversation. But, you know, we'll do what we can and we just try to make the best of it. Penguin, you got something?
Of course. Slightly going to a lighter note here. You mentioned the 10-yard fight. A nice blast to the past there. What, Shell, is your Mount Rushmore of sports video games?
All right, let's see. I'm gonna get the recency bias one out the way. It's this version of NCAA, and I say that because this is clearly my favorite franchise, you know, gaming franchise of all time. And I truly, truly believe this is the best game EA's ever put out for NCAA. I mean, I really do believe that. It has its faults, but you know, what NCAA game or what game has EA put out that we can ever say never had any faults? So it's like I said, it's recency bias, but I think it's correct. Or, I mean, you know, my Mount Rushmore, but I feel confident about that one. So I'm going to say NCAA. I'm going to say Super Tecmo Bowl. I like Super Tecmo Bowl. I know the first Tecmo Bowl was pretty life-changing, but I'm going to go Super Tecmo Bowl.
Solid choice.
Yeah, I'm going to go off the board a little bit here and say Bases Loaded on the Game Boy. How about that?
Wow.
I played that game so much.
I never played that one.
I was like, I mean, my mother and sister must have thought I was like just the weirdest kid ever because I would like keep track of my stats for every player. Like I could literally still remember some of the players' names. And I was, what, probably 8-10 years old.
I had notebooks for Bases Loaded too on the NES.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, of course, you know, the game, especially on a Game Boy, they didn't keep stats, so I would do it myself. But yeah, mm-hmm. I played the heck out of that game. So what did I just I got to 3 there, right? Man, I can't pick a specific game, but like I said, I've only really done sports games, so I'm just gonna say something in the NBA 2K franchise. I'm not one of those that usually can pick like to say 2008 was the best year. I don't know, they kind of just all are awesome to me, but NBA 2K is just such an awesome game. Like the franchise itself is just so on point for me. So I'm just gonna say something somewhere in that NBA 2K franchise.
All All right. Shell, I got another light question for you. If you had to take an 8-hour car ride with three other NDLers, who would it be and why?
All right, let's see. I'm gonna go with people I know because you don't want to be stuck in a car ride with a wild card, someone you don't know and haven't really interacted with. So I'm gonna go Corey. And that's just again, that's my guy from the past. We started in the NDL together. I'm gonna go with Patty because Patty's gonna make it fun. I don't think we can be in a car for 8 hours without Patty, without some laughs.
Is this, are you still choosing him if you've had a meal just beforehand and he has ordered and consumed Brussels sprouts?
If he said Brussels sprouts, he's out. He's out. He's gone. Yeah. Or if we're halfway there and we stop and he has Brussels sprouts, we're gonna leave him at the restaurant and we're gonna have to go without him. So yeah, good call out there. Let's see. I got one more, right? Yeah, you said three. Oh gosh, man, I want to go. I got three choices here. I got two Barakoffs and a Noel for real, good old Noli from the past.
Sausage fingers.
Yeah,
Yeah,
sausage fingers.
I'm gonna have to like rock, paper, scissor or toss a coin or something, but it's gonna be one of those three. I think I just picked five instead of three, but it's gonna be a Barakoff bro or Noli. But it has to be like Noli from the past, because we've lost future Noli, so he's apparently he's not as fun. So it has to be like 15 years ago, Noli.
Yeah.
Fair enough, fair enough. Now, to piggyback on that slightly, who's driving in this scenario?
Ooh, good call. I'm gonna say me, only because I love to drive and I can't even really remember. All right, I don't know how far back I'd have to go to like count on, one hand or something, however many, the last few times I've ridden in a car without driving, with my wife, never. I always drive. So I would just like to say me, but then again, if I'm picking with some other dudes, they might all say the same thing too. But personally, I would prefer to drive.
Gotcha. All right. To kind of jump off in that same theme here, we got a classic question that I always find interesting answers to. We're picking three more individuals, but this can be anyone in history to have a meal with. Who would you pick and why?
All right, here we go. I'm gonna get the boring sappy one out the way. I'm gonna pick my father. He died when I was really young, so we never really had a meal together. So I'll just move on from that one. I'm gonna go Chris Paul because he's my favorite athlete of all time. So he's my guy, Chris Paul. And the third one, okay, here we go. The third one, I'm gonna go Jesus. But probably not, maybe not for reasons you might be thinking, right? Like I'm not super religious, so I'm not going with Jesus because, I'm super religious. I'm going with Jesus because it would answer a lot of questions, right? There's a whole lot of people in the world like, have faith in Jesus. There's a whole lot of people that don't believe in Jesus. So when I send that invitation out to him, if he shows up, that answers a whole lot of questions. If he doesn't show up, it also answers a whole lot of questions. But either way, we're gonna get some serious answers by inviting the big guy.
Plus, there's that whole water into wine thing, which is really handy to
There you
have,
go.
like a
Yeah.
dinner
So
party.
yeah, we're gonna have fun. Yeah. I mean,
Now, why?
I mean. And now, think about it, I'm gonna have Jesus and the point God there. So Chris Paul. So I mean, I'm in good shape, right?
Now, Chris Paul, is that a selection because he spent time in New Orleans?
Certainly, yeah. So that's just that was the height of my basketball fandom, and the couple, a few good seasons we had there, and just the way he plays. Just it's more so the way he plays. Maybe not so much when he like kicks dudes in the junk. Not that part. But just the way he plays. He's just like. Pretty much the smartest basketball player probably I've ever seen, and he just knows everything that's going on the court, and then same thing being a New Orleans guy. So and then when he left, it certainly wasn't his fault. Our franchise was in complete disarray. That's whenever, if you recall, our owner couldn't even afford the team, and we literally had to sell the team back to the NBA while waiting for yeah. So I mean, and that's when he asked for a trade. Cannot blame him one bit. So never blame him, and he's. Just stayed my favorite NBA player and really just athlete in general. Even after he left, I've pulled for him. Never quite got that title, but he's still my guy.
Love it.
All right. Well, since we're already in Louisiana, let me ask you this. Where does the 2019 LSU rank in greatest college football teams of all time?
Oh, you know what I want to say. We got to put them at number one. But no, they're up there. I think I would say, and again, I'm biased, so they might not be number one, but I think they're probably underrated as a whole, on, you know, across all sport college football fans. You know, I think you just got to go Nebraska. What is it, 95 Nebraska, right? There's just, you know, just look at the schedule and look who they played or look at their scores. And it's hard to go against them. And I guess it's a little weird because the style they played, would that style really work nowadays? I don't think so. But, you know, you play the teams you play in your era, and they were so dominant. I think they got to get the nod as number one. I know 2001 Miami is another one is up there. But the way I look at 2001 Miami is they have, like, the most, you know, studs in the NFL, right? Like, their running back, their third, fourth string running back was, like, Clinton Portis or something ridiculous like that. But that's those guys in the NFL you're thinking of. Like, if you think of, like, you know, how they do in that college season – Miami had a couple close games. I mean, everyone remembers the Boston College game, right? 12-7, 20 seconds left. Boston College. Who was Boston College? They're about to score and go for the win. And then who was it? Ed Reed got whatever it was, the fumble.
Let's be honest. Ken Dorsey was a bum. That was a great team.
I like Ken Dorsey. But the point being is Miami had a couple of really close calls. And, you know, when I look at the LSU team, they didn't really have any close calls. You know, they had a couple of games where it looked close. I think, you know, they beat Bama by 5. But Bama scored late and then didn't get an onside kick. So we never were really like in the fourth quarter of a game and the other team had the ball and it was 2 minutes left and we might lose. We never had we had the ball or the game was over. So you know, I that's why I like LSU over Miami there. And we probably don't have the number of studs they do, but same with Burrow and Chase and Jefferson. We're putting out some guys too. The thing that probably held us back again, and it's injuries midseason on the defense. We had Grant Delpit and a couple of guys got hurt. So if you look at our schedule in the middle of the season, we gave up a lot of points. So that's always going to hurt you if you're talking about, you know, like a are you the best of all time scenario. But then we got those guys healthy by the end of the year, by the last game of the regular season. I think it was Texas A&M, then Georgia in the SEC championship, then the two playoff games. The defense was back and just rolling. And, like, you know, if we had those players all season. I think some of them played, but they were playing injured. If we played like that the entire season, had those guys healthy, we might have a better argument, but we're probably not quite there.
Fair enough. We'll jump back into the video game category. Let's give you a hypothetical here. You have just become the CEO of EA, and you have all say regarding the next game. What are you going to focus on? And is there anything specifically you're going to make sure they add to the game or take out?
Microtransactions. I want to get rich. No. Okay. No. More gotta.
You want a ball to use? That'll.
Gotta appease the shareholders. Okay. No. But all right. I'll give the serious answer. Is I would. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I could think of a million things, but just general. All I care about is gameplay. You know, like. Like, I love the online dynasties. I love offline dynasties, whatever. There's a bunch of things I can think of. You know, dynasties would be better if it, you know, do this instead of this or add this to the dynasty. But I wouldn't care. It can stay exactly as is. If they perfected gameplay, that's all that would matter. And again, as I said a few minutes ago, I think this is about as close as they've ever gotten to really replicating college football. It's not perfect. It never will be. But I think it's as close as they've ever gotten. But if they can just, you know, keep working on gameplay, just keep working on some of the things that, you know, we don't like now, like, you know, cover three zone seems to be a little OP, and that's the preferred defense of a lot of guys, and the way the option works. And it used to be if you pitched, you'd fumble, there'd be too many fumble pitches. And then in true EA fashion, when they fix something, they overdo it. And now, like, you can pitch the ball as you're getting hit and it goes 15 yards back and you don't fumble. So just little things like that. If they can just clean up some of those things, I'm seeing some good things. Like, I know, like now you see those pulling guards or pulling tackles out when you're going outside, and they just don't block anyone. They just run to nowhere and they don't block anyone. I'm hearing a lot of good things about, you know, for 26, that some of that's fixed. But again, just but the more generic answer, if they just perfected gameplay, like I said, even though I want them to do some things on Online Dynasty, they don't have to do a single thing. If they just perfected gameplay, Online Dynasty would be perfect. You know, it'd be fantastic. So it's just gameplay. That's all I would really worry about.
Follow up quickly on something you mentioned there. You mentioned Cover 3 being OP'd. In your opinion, just purely as someone who's quite successful at the game, do you believe it's truly a case of that Cover 3 is OP'd, or that the other defensive coverages are just have a lot more issues, making them less viable?
I mean, I think it is a bit of both, right? So, like, man defense has its, you know, struggles, right? Like, you know, if I run a zig route, mm-hmm. how many times yep. is the DB going to be anywhere near that receiver? So I definitely right. think part of that's true, but the cover three zone, it covers so much. And the one thing, I mean, I guess it's maybe hard to explain about here in a podcast, but is the soft spots in a cover three zone is kind of like the seams, but not like you're hitting a guy in stride, like going full speed. It's kind of, you know, like the tight end works his way around the linebacker, but before he gets to the safeties, he kind of just, it's not a curl route, but he just kind of sits in that spot, you know, behind the linebacker. Yep. But you can't really do that in this game. You know, you can't really do that. And cover three zone, and I think the other thing is, and I mean, I've never been a football coach or anything like that, but from what I gather, just, you know, if you're sitting in cover three zone all game, you're going to be vulnerable to the run. And this game, you're really not. Like, you know, if a guy can run, mm-hmm. he's going to run on defense. But cover three zone, you're not vulnerable to the run. That's probably the best way to say it. You know, like,
yeah, it doesn't really punish you for having.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can contain a run if you're in it, just like you can contain a run if you're in any other defense. I don't, you know, I don't see much difference there. So I do think it's the OP defense, OP defensive call. But like you said, there's definitely truth to, like, part of that is other defenses just don't really work well. I think we're talking about on the board today, cover four zone gets beat deep a lot. I ran a scrim 2 days ago, ran cover four zone, just watched the guy go, you know, kind of like right up the middle, up the seam, and no one guarded him. So, and that seemed to happen a lot in cover four zone, but it doesn't happen on cover three zone. So yeah.
Yep. I have dumped cover four completely from my playbook this last season because of that happening to me so many times in the past seasons.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I definitely think what you said has some certain truth to it, where cover three zone doesn't have as many or even any of those weaknesses. But generally speaking, there's other ways that OP that it probably shouldn't be, at least not that overpowered.
Yeah, I'd have to totally agree. The only cover four zone that I found work is the cover four drop contain. That's the only one, because it has the purple zone. All the other cover fours has matched properties, and that's why they're broken, because those safeties will play or start to play man to the first person that comes in their zone, and that other person runs by them, and it's like, oh, we didn't even realize you were there. Like, oh my God, it's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. So frustrating. But let me ask you this, sticking with the game, but going more so on the coaches' side of things, what coaches would you put in your top five coaches to play? You already covered two with Bierkoff and U.S. Marine. So what other three coaches would make your top five?
Let's see. I like playing Patty every time Patty and I play, because we're both, you know, more tuned with offense. So we get a lot of high scoring, a lot of crazy games. I like playing Texan Noel. He's improved so much, and we always have just wild games. It might not be high scoring games, but just kind of wild and crazy games. That could be because at least in the past, we haven't done so much lately. A lot of times we'd play at like midnight when we're both drinking. So maybe that's why we have these wild and wacky games.
It's a fantastic formula.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Let's see. Who would say Patty, Texanol? I have four. I need one more. I like playing that dude, even though he beats me all the time. But he's a fun challenge. He's a fun challenge to play.
definitely. Chris is nice. I know one person you don't like to play, me, because you keep avoiding the whole scrim. Like, we tried one time, and we had to stop, like, in the first quarter. We were supposed to play again. It still hasn't happened yet. Yeah, I still remember that. Just want to let you know. Anyways.
Playing a lot of golf, though.
Four.
Sometime.
Well, jumping into a more ranking of things, we're going to touch on the region that you're in there down in Cajun country.
Yes, sir.
It's definitely an area known for its fantastic food. So someone, you know, who's lived there and is familiar with it, how would you rank these items? Crawfish boil, gumbo of any kind, fried alligator, jambalaya, etouffee, with whichever shellfish of your choice?
Great question. And seafood is certainly, I mean, I'm from south Louisiana, like 30 minutes from the Gulf South, so seafood is the greatest food ever. So a crawfish boil is, and I do love all those other foods, or almost all those other foods, but a crawfish boil is better than all of those combined. That's like my favorite food of all time. Like, if you've been to a restaurant and just got boiled crawfish, You didn't do a crawfish boil. There's a difference, you know. If you're just down south and you're at a crawfish boil, that's the best food in the world. The crawfish, the sausage, the potatoes, the corn, just all of it. That's, you know, you can go to a restaurant and get boiled crawfish and it's fine, but it's just not the same as, you know, something down home, down south. Crawfish boil beats them all. I do love a good jambalaya, but next I'm going to go with a chicken and sausage gumbo. I'll even say my mother's chicken and sausage gumbo. That's pretty hard to beat too. That's just really good. And you got to put the Tony Chachere's, the Tony sauce, the Tony's seasoning in it. Got to put that in it. I would say
how much of a bite did you say is going to be in that?
Wait, say that again. Sorry.
How much of a bite? On the spice meter? How hot are we?
So believe it or not, I'm not. I mean, I'll do it, but I'm not crazy about spicy food, and that's because my mom was not crazy about spicy food. So she can call the food. It had a lot of seasoning, it had a lot of flavor, and it was good. But she just never made things spicy. That's probably why I never got into spicy food. But I'll do it. I'll be fine. I'm fine, you know, unless it's like, you know, like those crazy, you know, ghost peppers or whatever they're called. But just regular spicy food, I'm not crazy about it. But I'll do it. So it's kind of weird to be from down south and say I'm not crazy about the spicy stuff. But the Tony's, you know, put enough Tony's in it, it can get a little spicy. So, and I do like some Tony's seasoning in there. So I definitely like a little spicy. Shrimp etouffee is pretty hard to beat as well. So even, man, it's crazy because I love jambalaya and I feel like I'm ranking it fourth, but it is what it is. but believe it or not, the alligator, fried alligator, not crazy about that. Just give me some fried shrimp, I guess, but just never was, I'll eat it. I'll certainly eat it. I won't turn it down, but just never was crazy about fried alligator.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, one thing that I would like to know is if you can go to any sporting event, any game, anywhere in the world, what would you choose to go to?
So this is going to be kind of a crazy answer because it's a sport I'm not even a big fan of. But the way I look at it is like you always hear about the Super Bowl, right? It's like a corporate event, you know, like, you know, it's, you don't have a lot of like, you know, it's not 70,000 fans of a team. It's just a lot of corp. So, you know, you don't obviously if my team's in the Super Bowl, the Saints are in the Super Bowl, that changes it. But you know what I mean? Just you're asking the general question. Super Bowl being there doesn't really do it for me. You know, I can definitely do an NBA Finals Game 7. I think that would be my pick. But I'm even going to go off the board a little bit and say I'm just a casual soccer fan. But just the idea of being at a Champions League final, you know, isn't that the most watched, you know, sporting event or television event in the world? Mm-hmm. I think that's up there. I mean, I would take an NBA Finals Game 7 if I can get, you know, a specific NBA Finals Game 7. I'll take that any day. But if I can't get down to that level of specificity, I might even take, you know, a Champions League final.
Love it. Yeah, now I'm going to jump into another category. Oh, sorry. Did you have more, Kane?
No. I was getting ready to say I definitely agree with those choices.
And to jump in something that we didn't mention going into earlier, but that I know you are a fan of musically, the band 311. And have been, yes, sir, for some time. Now, give you a couple questions about 311 here. Now, what would you call your top, say, 3 to 5 311 songs of all time?
All right. Favorite 311 song of all time. These are not going to be songs. If you're not a crazy big fan, you probably won't know them, but it's a song called Use of Time. It's a slow song, two awesome guitar solos, but Use of Time, that's like a popular.
That's on Transistor, right?
Song, but it's a popular like favorite song for like 311 diehards. That's probably the best way to say it. So I'm going to go Use of Time. I'm going to go Rollin', which is a song that they probably wrote in like 1990 or something ridiculous. It's about like getting in a fight, you know, like dumb stuff that, you know, probably I thought was cool whenever I first started listening to 311. Let's see what else.
I know that one. I've heard of, I'm aware of Use of Time.
It's, yeah, not on like any of their studio albums. They have a album called, they have a song called Unity, but they have an album called Unity that they was like from like 1990, like before they even, you know, did any of their actual records, you call it, and it's on there. So that's a good one. Gosh, I like songs on the Grassroots album. It's funny that you're saying this, because other than use of time, I've never thought of like a top five. That's what's funny about you saying this. I'm like, I really have a top one, but like just probably something from the Grassroots album. Yeah, something, just maybe a couple more songs from the Grassroots album.
Okay, so definitely.
Surprising that the one you got, you, the question I got stumped on is a 311 question.
No, I got to see him in the past a few times myself, and definitely that was a pretty darn good show. That was, I think that would have been mid to late 90s.
Yeah, so, they just happened to come like 3 weeks ago. They're here in town, and I went to see them just kind of randomly.
Yeah, so that means they've been, because they were, is it, they formed, was it late 80s technically?
Yeah, late 80s they formed, and I think 93 was like their first studio album. But yeah, they've been around for pushing 35 years or something ridiculous like that.
Man, that's crazy.
It was 95 was when I first heard of them. It was like so I was 16 years old at the time, and my buddy went to Warped Tour with his friends.
Yes.
And he'd come to the house all the time. And he just came to the house with the Blue Album. It was right when the Blue Album came out. But this, like, so the Blue Album came out, but 311 didn't get popular for 2 years after that. So still no one knew about him.
I played that album hard. Down, yeah. All Mixed Up, Don't Stay Home.
Yeah. So he came to my house one day in 1995. I'd never heard of him. And he's just like, here's a CD. I'm just going to leave it with you. Check it out, you know? And I listened to it. And I'm like, that's pretty much it. They just pretty much, you know, been my favorite band since.
Fantastic.
All right. So we all know that you guys just recently took this nice trip that I unfortunately missed out on, and I will not be missing out on next year. But what is your favorite memory from this year's Texas NDL Convention, and why should people go out of their way to attend one of these in the future?
Yeah, I'll give a favorite memory, but before I give a specific one, it's probably not really any memory, just the entire weekend, you know, just being there with the fellas and just all of it as one is like just one big memory. I know it's a cheesy answer, but that's probably the best part. But I think the I already lost track of night, so I guess it would have been the first night. The Friday night poker, I'm going to say that was my favorite. You know, it's a moment, but our Friday night poker tournament, just because, you know, it was Friday. Saturday, I guess, you know, us old guys, we all went pretty hard Friday. So Saturday, we, at least most of us, if not all of us, went a little easy. So Friday night, we didn't go as easy. So Friday night, everyone was pretty much good and drunk, except for Corey, because he didn't drink. But anyway, everyone was pretty good and drunk, and we had a poker tournament, and just, you know, a bunch of drunk dudes playing poker. It was unmatched. It was awesome. Just funny stories, and Drew Baca was the MVP of storytelling, and it was just a good time. So I would definitely say that would be like the top memory. And I think just anyone or everyone should go, just because, I mean, we're all good dudes in the NDL. Like, you know, like, it's just easy to get along with pretty much everyone. And if you go, it's, you're pretty much guaranteed to have a good time. I'm pretty sure no one went that was like, man, you know, I really didn't have a lot of fun this weekend. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone went, had an absolute blast. And anyone that would go that didn't go to this one and might go to the next one would have an absolute blast. So if you have the means or, you know, the time to take off, there's no reason to not do it if you can pull it off.
That's awesome. Yeah, and Corey, if you're listening to this, next year when we go, you won't be the only one not drinking. I'll be sitting there chilling with you, my friend, although I will be playing poker because I love taking people's money. Anyways.
There you go.
That could be a huge advantage. You're the only sober man.
Yeah, the only sober one, right? Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Well, jumping back into questions about where you're from and family area and whatnot, Cajuns have been portrayed in cinema in many ways. What would you say is your favorite portrayal in the media of a Cajun personality, and why is it Farmer Fran is portrayed by Blake Clark in the classic The Waterboy?
Farmer Fran's awesome. Farmer Fran's funny. All right, so I'm gonna do the, this might be the one non-answer, but I'm gonna zig when everyone zags. But the way Cajun folks are portrayed in movies are just terrible. Like the accents, I've never seen a good one. I'm just being honest. I've never seen a good accent. You know, like Farmer Fran's awesome. He's hilarious. But I've never seen, whether it's a funny movie or not a funny movie, I've never seen just the true Cajun accent, or, you know, just the essence of a Cajun person. I've never seen it portrayed where I'd be like, wow, they did a good job. I'll just go with your former friend just because he made me laugh. But like I said, I've never seen one where I'm like, man, they knocked it out the park. So maybe it should, you know, just being too close to it or being it's too real for me or whatever you want to call it. I just haven't seen it done right.
What do you think? How do they miss? How would you do say their shortcoming in Hollywood?
I almost want to say it's if you know, just the way they do the, I mean, and obviously most of the times when you see it, it's like it's for comedic factor, so it's overdone, mm-hmm. like in a Waterboy, right? So you're not gonna complain about yeah. that. Like, I'm not even talking about the accent, I'm just talking about Cajuns in general, just because it's supposed to be, you know, over the top. But like the accents, I'm not even gonna say they try too hard, because man, if you have tried to talk to some of the people I grew up with or my uncles or whoever, like you can barely understand them. Like the accents are that thick, they're just, when I see them in movies, they're just not done right. I don't know. It's hard to explain. You know, just I'm like, gotcha. I've never heard a Cajun talk like that. Like it's I see the vision, but I've never heard someone talk like that. But yeah, so you know, like it's like I said, it's not that they even try too hard. It's because I've seen some thick accents. Just a mm-hmm. quick story. So like pretty much everyone my mother's age, you know, like whatever, 60s, 70s, where I'm from, I would say probably almost 100% of them speak French. And then mm-hmm. probably most kids when I was in high school spoke French, just Cajun French. I didn't, unfortunately. I guess I was too cool to learn it. I wish I had now. My grandmother growing up, now don't get me wrong, she spoke English perfectly fine, but she spoke better French than English. And then my great-grandmother, who she probably died like mid-90s, she didn't speak mm-hmm. English at all. She only spoke Cajun French. She spoke zero English. So when we'd visit her, my mom would have to translate. So it's, you know, it's like I said, where I'm from, it's very, very, very Cajun down there. So I just don't see the movies do it justice, if you will.
Okay. Well, one day, hopefully.
We'll get one. Yeah, we'll get one day. Yeah. I like it.
Okay, one day.
Keep the faith.
Well, I mean, it might not be Hollywood, because I can't say I've seen anything in Hollywood. But me personally, can't really say because I'm not from there, so I don't know the whole Cajun thing. But Gambit, I thought that was a pretty good, you know, Cajun accent. That's the best thing I could pull out. Gambit would be like my only one to be Farmer Friend. I'm sorry.
That's pretty funny. What's his LeBeau or something like that? What was his name?
Remy LeBeau. Yeah,
Remy LeBeau. That's a good one.
All right, so this one I found was a very funny one, and I'm going to ask it so that he doesn't, because I want to. How manly are you on a scale of Boy George to Chuck Norris? And what is the manliest thing you have ever done? You know, like, you know, take down a tree with an axe, field dress a bear, you track for days in the Alaskan wilderness, or, you know, something like that.
Definitely never done any of that. So I think I'm going to put myself squarely in the middle. I mean, I like to think I'm nowhere near Boy George. But if I'm being honest with myself, I'm also nowhere near Chuck Norris. So if that's a 0 to 10 type level, I'm going to say somewhere around the 5. If we have and maybe not even 5, if there was a zombie apocalypse, I would probably be in trouble. I'd be in trouble. People wouldn't be running to me for, you know, how do we stay alive? I probably wouldn't do so well. You know, I would need to be part of a group. I can help, you know, lead a group, but I'm certainly, you know, not going to be the one it wouldn't go well. It wouldn't go well for me if I was in a zombie apocalypse.
So you know Rick, huh?
Well, how well would you handle, let's say, a camping trip? We're not talking glamping. There's no RV. real tent. Have to make the fire. Food is either from a can or something you get from nature. Are you going to be able to survive in that scenario?
I say yes, but not very well. And for that reason, or even other reasons, camping's just not on my list of vacations or things I ever want to do. So I would probably make it, but it wouldn't be pretty.
That's crazy, because I'm not gonna lie, I love camping. Give me skydiving, yeah, cliff diving, base jumping. Like, I'll do it all.
Those are all very different than camping.
I was thinking the same thing.
I'm just talking about outdoor stuff. Jeez, come on. Okay. You gotta just Woo! All right.
I'd much prefer to jump off a 30-foot cliff than go camping any day.
Oh, wow. That's serious. I mean, you would think I'd be on the other end of that because, like, I am definitely allergic to anything with a stinger. Like, seriously, if I get stung, I got 12 minutes. So, yeah, you would think I don't like the outdoors, but, yeah, I love it. No, I just carry my EpiPen with me anywhere I go.
Yeah, I'm an indoorsy type of guy.
I think a lot of us are. So, Shell, what's the story behind your love for LSU?
Pretty much, like I said, you know, just born and raised in South Louisiana. Really only have, and especially when I was born, I guess we have the New Orleans Pelicans now, even though they stink. But you have LSU and the Saints, and you got nothing, you know, from a sports, you know. From a sports perspective, there's just nothing else to like it. And just pretty much everyone in my family, you know, we're sports fans, and I did get a lot of it for myself though, because I grew up in a household with just my mom and my sister, and they weren't sports fans. So I just remember being 5 years old, go to church, get home from church, put on the Saints game right when it's kicking off, and I would just watch 3 hours of a game by myself at 5 years old. My mom would always tell me stories about that. So I just kind of, you know, it is a thing where, you know, just tons of people where I'm from that just, you know, they just, there's a lot of LSU fandom, but I did also pick it up mostly just on my own, just loving sports, just randomly, you know, just from the time I was born, just loving all things sports and just watching, you know, as much LSU and Saints football as I can.
That's awesome. Just to get things a little wrapped up here, let's Penguin have one more question for you before I throw out that last one.
Certainly.
Sure. We'll ask throw a customary one in here that I think should ask of most OGs, as it would be. If all newer coaches, people that, you know, just joined or joined this next season, if you had to give them a little bit of words of advice on just being a successful part of the NDL, not on the field, Mr. Per se, but just to join and, you know, be a positive addition to the league, what would you tell them?
Yeah, just take it all in. Be active, you know. Join some of the chats. I mean, even though I'm not sure how much I suggest going to live chat all the time, but you know, just be active. Get to know guys, play guys, scrim guys. You know, you'll learn a lot scrimming guys. You know, just getting better. But you also just get to know people, right? You know, like that's really what the NDL is all about: the community and just, you know, group of guys we have. Even if you're new, you know, I know it might be tough or a little tricky, but even if you're new, but go to a convention if you can. I know it's easier said than done, but, you know, just don't be afraid to, you know, like, just get to know people. Like I said, the community is everything about the NDL. So, you know, above the football, that's just the best way to do it. Just get to know people. And a lot of times you're getting to know people by just, you know, playing football, playing against them. But just getting to know people, talk to people, that's definitely the best way to go about it.
Well, that's awesome. To be completely honest, that was actually the question I was going to ask. So, yeah, we can go ahead and get things wrapped up. I mean, we've been here long enough, and hopefully the guys outside listening have gotten a chance to sit down and really get to learn a little bit more about the man behind the mask, the man behind the rules, and see that he's just like any one of us here, just a normal guy just looking to have fun. Well, we'd like to thank you guys for tuning in to this edition of Inside the NDL. Again, I'd like to thank Shell for coming on and being our guest, and I'd like to thank Penguin for his help at hosting. We will definitely see you guys next time.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, fellas.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.